need your help to get from here to there. It's hard for me to admit it. I don't think I want to admit it. Do you want to help me? Do you even care? Can you help me get from here to there? Life can be so hard. Can you understand? Have you ever been there? Tell me if you can. I know I need to change, and I know I've been unfair, but can you help me get from here to there? It's time to grow up now and try and do things right. Stop acting like a child. But I can't do this alone, so now I'm asking you if you're willing to help me. I might not have the courage to ask you again. If you want to think about it, well, you can tell me then. Do you want to help me? Do you even care? Can you help me get from here to there? Do you want to help me? Do you even care? Can you help me get from here to there?
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length, where we discuss all things E-Mini, along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Hey, good afternoon from the park and welcome back. Today is Thursday, 11th day of August, 2011. S&P is up 29, the Dow is up 254, the comp is up 66, the wild ride continues. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Gold was getting a little bit out of hand, so they had to spank that thing, and they raised the margins. Remember how they did with silver when silver started getting crazy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the margins were like 25 grand for the large contract, right?
Yeah, they just did that on gold, kind of reining in a little bit. So, it's down as a result. No big surprise. Major indexes up over 2%. Not just here in America, but around the world, even in France. And the big news on the European front, they're going to ban short selling.
Hmm.
At least, I don't have the fine details, but... it may be a temporary ban on certain issues like we had here in the U.S. for a while on the financials, or it may be across the board. Now, I'm very much against naked short selling. I spent, a couple years in the beginning of CFRN history pounding the table on the whole naked shorting issue. It's a criminal enterprise, it's wrong, you can't sell what you don't own, etc., blah, blah, blah. But being able to short the market, that's what makes a market. So for Europe to say, well, you know what, we don't want our stocks to go down anymore, so we're going to ban short selling. It would not, because of how far left they lean, it wouldn't surprise me for them to just, say, nope, no short selling, period. Well, they've got some really smart people there, so somebody will figure out, well, wait a minute, that's what makes a market. The ability to say, I'm thinking this is going to go up, and I'm thinking, it's not. So we'll see what it comes out of the next few days, and once we get more information on exactly what their ban entails and how they're going to manage that and handle it. And I guess if you're in Europe, you can open an account somewhere else. I mean, if that's your game, if that's what you do, if that's your line of work, is that you short stocks. And some people have a real heavy-handed opinion about that. Well, you're making money off someone else's problems and bad luck and whatever. Well, their argument is you can go find a stock, go find a company that's doing well and buy that instead of selling the stock of some company that's not doing well. Well, I don't know. We could spend, a couple years discussing that, on this radio program. Oh, we already did that. Okay. Well, the podcasts are out there, guys, and a lot of you sat through it and listened to it, and so you already know my stance and my argument. And with that, we'll turn to today's markets here in the U.S. And we have indeed had a pretty splendiferous rally. I don't think I've ever said splendiferous on the air before, so I'm feeling good about that. The low, 1103 right here, up to the high at 1154 and a quarter. Now, I admit, my tweet was a bad toot. I was about, I don't know, 3 hours or more, about 3 hours off, I guess. I was looking to buy the London Open, and it was more our open here, where the rally got underway. So, but it's here, and it's been a nice one, and everybody's excited. But look at the gyrations we've had this week. From way up here at 67, 68, 1167, 1168 on Monday, the high weekly trading zone. All the way down in one day to 10. This is the S&P, not the Dow. Okay, this is down to 1081 weekly trading zone, and then on Tuesday, right back up to 67.68, and then on Wednesday we got right back to that kind of midpoint. In fact,
looks like about 68%.
Yep, 62. Yep, that's exactly what it is. And then this little overhang right here, and then this rally got underway. Now, we talked about this in the live trading room. Still waiting on a blue MA1 here. I want to see a pullback for a continued advance of this thing. If we don't get that, then we may have seen the high. If we look here. And the last rally attempt, which was right here yesterday. You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay. I just had to close the door. Okay. I'm sorry about that. So my mic was off.
Alright. See, this was a rally attempt yesterday afternoon that failed. In fact, that's the one David was talking about. He was looking for a decline in the sixth hour, I believe it was. And so that would have been this. And so we're, you know, just looking left. That's it. Nothing more than that. Once we took out the overnight highs right here, then the next thing to look at would be this. So we'll see. If we pull up to that, then we could get the blue MA1, and then we get a pull back into that blue MA1, and I'm looking for a continued advance. If we get here, stall, fall down, roll over, then I don't know. You know, we're either going to 67.68, or we're going back to 81.82. One or the other. Not necessarily today, but at some point. So, Michael, with that, I will turn the mic over to you and let you run the screens if you want to. Put the recording together. You ready for that?
Yes, I am, now that I have my mic on. let me grab the screens. Hopefully it won't be too purple. We'll see. Yep, purple again. Alright, purple's gone.
So where did Bert say he was going on vacation to? Martha's Vineyard?
He's hanging out with the president.
That was the other guy.
That was the other guy.
If you want to impress him, Bert, take a pack of smokes with you.
Let's see. All right, I'm going to start the recording, and then I'll go over the morning session. Now, everybody should be looking at my charts right now. I believe you are.
Yes
you are. All right. Ready? The morning session is 2-1. All right. Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, everyone. It is August 11th, 2011, and I just want to go over the morning session that we had today. I didn't do much for pre-market trading today. It was pretty much all from the open. There was a bunch of opportunity, again, a lot of volatility, a lot of opportunity. You can see in here in the pre-market trades, you know, this was a long trade right here, and that just took off. Another one right in here. That didn't move as quickly, but I digress. I didn't take any of those trades. I started trading at 9:30, so I'll bring you to that. All right. Let me scroll over there. There we go. All right, now this was actually the first trade of the day. I didn't mark up every trade like I normally do because the market was just moving too fast. Okay. Right in here, I jumped into this one, and where I jumped in was a bad entry, actually, and it stopped me out. So I paid the price for that immediately. I was down, I think, 7 ticks or something like that immediately. We came back from that over here. I'm just going to blow this up so we can see more of it. I didn't mark every trade. I tried to mark every trade that I took, though. Okay, so that first trade that I took was a losing trade. It was followed up by a bunch of winning trades, as soon as I can get my screen in the right place. All right, I'll just go backwards. All right. I'm having memory issues here again, as you can see. And yes, I do realize that happens with age. All right, over here, I went long over here. This was the actual setup over here. Let me show you the actual setup for those of you guys who are new, maybe looking at this for the first time. The actual setup right here on the 4-tick range. This is the ES 4-tick range chart. The actual setup was the break of the elbow. You buy in right there at the break of the elbow. I use a 2-point bracket on it. Now, usually I move the target out and get more than 2 points if I can. Right here, the entry should have been at 33. I got in at like 33.75 or something like that. It pulled back here to 31.25. So if I would have gotten in at 33, it would have been a winning trade. It is what it is, though. I did not get in at 33, and it was not a winning trade. So that's how I started my morning on the ES. Then we came over here. This was a continuation trade. When we got the bubble down here, we're looking for the continuation trade, the bounce right here. I did go long here, and once it got some profit into it, I moved my stop up to break even plus a tick, and it came back and got me there at break even plus a tick. So I gained 1 tick on that one. This was also a long over here. I missed that one for some reason. I don't know why, but I did miss it. Now the next trade was right here. It was a short trade. I'm just going to scroll over a little bit. All right, I'll bring the next couple into view. The next trade was right here, a break of the elbow on the downside. The entry was right here. I did enter that and took profit on it. The next opportunity was over here. Same thing, the elbow broke on the downside. Now the elbow broke on the upside over here. I think there was something on the 10th. There was a weekly trading zone up above us, that's what it was. There was a weekly trading zone up above us, so I wasn't looking to go long on either one of these trades, or over here for that matter either. over here I was looking to go short though, and we did go short, and we took profit on this. Moving along, I still was not looking to go short, I mean to go long over here, though there was a trade right here, would have been the entry, and that I think it went up to the profit target there. Over here, there was a short, we broke the elbow right over here. I didn't actually get into it till over here, but I still got into it and I got my profit out of it. Over here I shorted again the bubble down here, and it pulled back up to the BBC. I shorted the BBC and took break even once it got some profit into it. I was being really aggressive with my stops today, okay, because of the volatility. I've been really aggressive with my stops, I should say, all week because of the volatility. Again, a pullback up right here to the BBC I shorted and took profit on. There was a long trade right here. Now we're a long way away from the weekly trading zone. We're, you know, at 27 here. We're a good 10 points away, so I would have gone long over here had I noticed it. But I was also trading the Russell a little bit this morning, too. this was a nice long trade right here. And over here you can see we got a big bubble around the bands. So there would have been a long continuation trade right here as well. All right, I didn't get either one of those. And there would have been another continuation trade right here. And another one right here that would have lost. Okay, nothing on the short side. And now we're back up to the, actually, right in here, we're back up to the weekly trading zone. So we might not have taken that one anyway. Again, weekly trading zone not going long. Over here, there was a short trade right here. The break of the elbow, moved down, short trade. there was a trade here I didn't take that was a pullback up to the BBC that would have failed had I taken it. Over here, this was not a valid long trade for me. Though it worked out perfectly, it was not a valid long trade. Right, then the market started moving up here, and I must have been trading some other market to not be watching this. I would have been looking for a higher swing pivot here, like this one right here, with the bubble down here and going long right over here. That's what I would have been looking for. Okay. Now, we don't really have a big bubble down here anymore, so we wouldn't have been looking to go long. Over here, where it's breaking out of the bands, right here where the red is breaking out of the black bands, and we're breaking the elbow right here, would have been looking to go short there had I been watching it, but I wasn't. Over here, a long trade that I apparently took a break even on. It went up and down and back up, and I took a break even on it. These orange arrows are trades that I did not take that set up. Okay, you can see both of those worked out okay. This one was questionable, though. I probably would have gotten a break even on that one. Let's go. Moving on a little farther, this was a continuation trade. You see the bubble around the bands down here, the pullback to the BBC. So I did take that, and I took it again over here. All right, taking profit on both of those. Break the elbow over here. When it pulled out of the bands right here, the red pulled out of the black bands, and we broke the elbow right over here, there was a move down. And that one just kind of slowly went down. We didn't have the bubble for the continuation trade. All right. Over here, there was a long trade that I took, and I ended up taking a break even on it when it went within a tick of my profit target up here. Okay. This one I got into it a little late, so I had a better entry than right here. I think I was in at 51 quarter instead of 51 half, and it popped up to 52 half. So I had five or six ticks in this trade, and I moved my profit target and my stop up. All right. Let's see. Move down here. Did it break out of the elbow? It did, right in here. I obviously didn't take any of these trades. I think the last trade I actually took was right over there. Was it? No, I took this one over here, I guess. It was the last trade I took. We broke the elbow and I got long and it went to profit target. That was the last one that I took. And I just drew these in a few minutes ago while Dwayne was talking, which were trades that had just set up here recently. You know, there was a win there, and a loss here. And currently it's inside the box and there are no trades there. Not really much in here going on right now. Ooh. All right, that was the ES. I didn't take any trades on the YM this morning. I didn't take any trades on the 6E this morning. I did take trades on the Russell, and I'll show you what I was doing on the Russell. This is something that we discussed a couple of weeks ago in the partners meeting. And we'll go over it again tonight in the partners meeting. Which, by the way, if you guys are a partner, starts tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern time. If you're not a partner and you're in here on trial, you need to become a partner to be in it. Become a partner by tonight, and we'll give you a discount. You can contact me at tech, that's T-E-C-H at CFRN.net, or Dwayne, D-W-A-I-N, at CFRN.net, to get the details on that. Okay. Let me just scroll up here. Yeah, you can also call at 573-224-3366. Again, that's 573-224-3366 to get more details about it. All right. Now, moving on to the Russell. What I did in here on the Russell, I was up 20 ticks at one point, then I ended up down about 25 ticks. But I was trading it on another platform as well, and I ended up 36 ticks over there. You can see right here. Okay. So I'm plus 11 on the morning on the Russell. Oh, and I didn't even show you what I did on the ES. On the ES, I ended up plus 30 ticks and plus 11 ticks on the Russell. So altogether, I think that's about $475 a contract or something like that. Just do the math. 375, $300, $485 a contract is what it is. Before commissions. Now, let me bring the Russell up here because I didn't take any YM trades this morning, so I'll just show you what I was doing on the Russell. But I was doing it on a 3-tick range chart, and I'll blow it up for you. And I marked some of the trades that I took, but they just happened too fast on the Russell, so I didn't mark all of them. and we have very little on here as far as indicators go. DMA1 and the chop bands up here and the chop bands down here. What I was looking for were long trades, or just closes outside of the bands. Alright? So longs like that, shorts like that, longs like that. This was a short here that didn't work out. Shorts like that, longs like that, shorts like that, shorts like that, and like that. I used, today I was using a 6x20 bracket on the Russell, and you know, I ended in the DOM that I have in here, I was minus 25 ticks, right? That's minus $250 a contract. And this other DOM, I was plus 36 ticks, so that's plus $360 a contract. So I ended plus 11 overall, but I missed a ton of them. And I missed a ton of losing trades as well. This, you know, there's a lot of false signals with this, but that's why I use a 6x20 bracket on it. And you can see that when, you know, if you get into one of these trades that really got going here, like 669.4, and within a couple of minutes, and within 2 minutes, it dropped all the way down to 662.9. So what was that, 69.4? We'll say 63.4. That's $600 a contract in a couple of minutes. And you can see on the long side, it was doing the same way, the same thing. It was just whipping back and forth. So I didn't put a lot of risk on it, because if it's going to be wrong, it's generally going to be totally wrong. And if it's going to take off and be right, it's going to be totally right. So that's how I was playing this market today. All right. I didn't do too much in it. You know, I did a little bit with it, enough to make some money. But that's how I was playing it. And you can see, you know, I marked a couple of the trades that I took in here. When it got in this really choppy area right here, we just went over to the ES and didn't do anything. And we missed some really nice trades here. But you know, as I say to everybody in the room every day, you don't have to trade every market that I trade, and don't try to trade every market that I trade. Pick a market that you're comfortable with. You know, learn the setups that we teach, and you can trade it however you want. All right, you can do. You know, I would recommend doing just one market, whatever market you're most comfortable with. But you can see how it was nailing these moves up and these moves down, the big ones anyway. And you know, if you get into the trade when it's right, it's right. And when it's wrong, like this one right here, it's totally wrong. So you don't need to put a lot of risk on it. And that is that. You can see right here, we just had a short trade right here a few minutes ago, 11:22. While I was talking, we had this short trade right here. We had a long trade over here that moved up. That was pretty close to a point right there. It moved up. A short trade over here that moved down the full 2 points, and then some. Looks like it moved down 3 points. Over here, a long trade that moved up a couple. Over here, a short trade that moved down a couple. Long trade that moved up a couple. A short trade that would have stopped you out. This right here would have stopped you out. Well, if you got over here, it would have moved down about a point. All right. So that was the Russell this morning. Now I'll show you the YM. I'll show you the YM, though I didn't trade it. I'll show it to you. Early on, the YM was a little more orderly. Right now, it's pretty choppy. But, you know, we had the bullish cross here and a pullback down. Right over here, you would have had to been aggressive to get into this, but you could have gone long right in there. Then once you put in a higher swing, you could have tried it again right here. Put in a higher swing, you hit the weekly trading zone. Probably not wanting to trade into the zone from here. Then it goes bearish right here. You get a bearish cross. It pulled up here to give a move down. Pulled again to give another move down. And then right here, it pulled right back through it. Now, on the YM, I use a 7x20. That's my risk-reward on the YM. So I would have stopped out right here and right here. But all these other ones, I would have made money. Right here would have been a long trade. Another one right here. If you do more than one per side, I only do one per side usually. Okay, so I wouldn't have gotten caught here. I would have stopped out here, though, for sure. But here's another one right here that went right up to the zone. Then once we got above the zone, this is when it got choppy up here. We got above the zone. We had a bearish cross, but we had no price continuation there. Over here, it moved up and gave us a bullish cross and no price continuation. Move back down, gave us another bearish cross with a pullback up. Right here would have been where you were looking to short. All right, for the move down. Gave us another bullish cross right here with no continuation. Another bearish with no continuation, so it's just really choppy in here right now. It gave us a bullish cross here, and it bounced off the BBC. The price did continue, and it bounced off the BBC to give it the 20 points. And now it's giving us a bearish cross right here. So that's where the YM stands on the day. I haven't even looked at the 6E yet, so I'll go over it quickly with you, but it's the first time I'm looking at it this morning. Okay, I didn't look at it last night. I didn't look at it this morning. But what we're looking at here is just like the Russell. Okay, this is a four-tick range chart on the 6E. And you know, right in here would have been a long trade. The pullback over here for continuation trade. Pullback over here for continuation trade. Pullback over here for continuation trade. Pullback over here would have stopped you out, probably, if you didn't move your stop up. Right over here, you break the elbow and move down. Do it again over here. And pull back here, move down. So the 6E had plenty of opportunity this morning too. It started out pretty choppy though. It looks like this period right in here from 10 to 10:30 looks pretty messy. I didn't have enough eyes and hands and monitors to trade it this morning. But you can see there's a move up there at the open, a move down at the open. Yeah. So it had a couple of nice opportunities as well. It just had one here a few minutes ago. Okay, just had one here a few minutes ago. And I think that is going to wrap it up for us for the recording for today. Again, today is August 11th, 2011. And that was our morning trading. All right, recording is stopped.
And we're back live. All right. Good job. Very good.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know if everybody saw that. We ended up... Why, thank you, everyone. We got 30 ticks profit here on the ES, and we ended up with 11 ticks total profit on the Russell. Okay. And let me just... put this one out there right away.
There's a partners meeting tonight, guys. All the partners, 9 p.m. Eastern. Same place, same channel. If you're on a free trial right now and you want to be a part of the partners meeting, you got to be a partner. So give Dwayne a call at that 573 funny number. What is that? Why can't I remember that?
573-224-3366.
I get him one of those catchy numbers. Okay, is that it? You got it?
Yeah, 573-224-3366.
Good job. It took me like a year, but then I finally got Bert and Leslie's memorized. If you need to get a hold of Bert or Leslie, 866-928-3310. Now, if I couldn't say it in that little sing-songy voice, I wouldn't be able to remember it, so it's just... one of those things, 866-928-3310. That's if you need any help with your platform, getting your account opened, any of that stuff. You know, questions about margins, commissions, Bert and Leslie, 866-928-3310. Now, I did pull up some news on the short selling issue in France, and here's the deal. Senior government sources... say that a short selling ban will be imposed in France and Italy after the market closes today. The independent European Union body provides forum to national financial regulators. Said on Thursday it's increasing market surveillance following the rumor-led drop in French bank shares that took place on Wednesday and then again on Thursday. Now, this guy, he wouldn't comment on the ban. But there's about 57 articles out there that say, in fact, the European markets, France and Italy specifically, will ban short selling on Thursday night. Now, one of the very prominent articles right underneath that from the Wall Street Journal blog, it says short selling ban history lesson from September 19th. And when I take the charts back, I'll show you guys this chart. But what's very misleading about this, what this blogger wrote, he says, well, you know, when they tried to do the ban on short selling here in the U.S., he's got a chart, it didn't work. There was still this huge sell-off. Well, the difference between what they're doing there and what we did here is when Christopher Cox at the SEC stepped up and said, we're going to ban naked short selling in the financials. Well, excuse me, Mr. in charge of the SEC, it's already illegal. Naked short selling and short selling are two entirely different animals. So what France and Italy say they're going to do is they're going to ban short selling, period. There's no information about for how long, etc. But what we did here in the U.S. Is we said, okay, the stuff that's already blatantly illegal, seriously, guys, you got to knock it off. I mean, we'd been doing radio shows for years going, hey, wait a minute, this is criminal activity sanctioned by the very governing body that's supposed to prevent this nonsense. And, there's podcasts. You guys have heard them, of us calling their office and trying to talk to them and talking to some of them. And, you know, it was a big, big thing back in the day. We finally moved on and just, you know, decided to trade futures where it wasn't even an issue. But, I mean, this guy's trying to compare apples to oranges on the Wall Street Journal blog. It's two entirely different things. So, we'll see how it plays out and what kind of effect it has in their markets. And then we'll see if anyone else decides to, any other countries, any other markets decide to follow suit. And that's about all I got. Anything else you want to add, Michael?
All right. No, there's not much else to add at this point. Congress and our president are on vacation, and I think the president said he's got no intention of calling anyone back, so...
I always knew that Burton Schlichter was a high roller. See, he's on vacation, Congress on vacation, president on vacation. Actually, Burt's not even on vacation yet. He's just taking the day off to pack, I guess. I get a Speedo pressed or something, I don't know. Martinized. Burt, we love you.
I'm sure he's got a lot more packing to do
all
now.
All right. Ready to go to Vegas? Speaking of Vegas, oh my goodness. You know, Frank Sinatra, we always heard that, you know, the guys were mobbed up and blah, blah, blah. I've been watching this Kennedy miniseries on Netflix. Frankie was a bad boy. I mean, seriously bad. But,
yeah,
you know, I never knew. I just thought he had a beautiful voice. Ladies
there
and
you are, Dwayne.
Mr. David Williams, PageTrader.com. How are you, David?
Thank you. Good, good. How are you, Dwayne?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Good. Is Michael with us today?
Michael Borg?
I am. Good morning, Michael. Good morning, David. Well, pretty tumultuous world we're living in right now.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. It is. I think it's time for a beer. And it's, what time is it? It's just, it's 9:30.
12:40. I'm good, though.
I'm good with that, too.
That's an old saying. It's always 5 o'clock somewhere or some nonsense like that.
It's 12:40 for me. Yeah, it's 9:40 for me. Dwayne, is it 9:40 for you?
9:40 I.
Yeah, in the old days when, you know, I didn't drink at all, I didn't drink at all. Then when things started getting a little rougher, I might have a little beer maybe at 5 or 6 at night. Now it's 9:40, and that's my breakfast. That's how I roll.
That's how you roll? Well, you know, if the days just run into the other, you know, if you stay up all night and one day just runs right into the next, then, you know, time's really irrelevant, isn't it?
It gets to be irrelevant after a while in this condition. Anyway, yeah, just you look around and you just think, good Lord, we are just, you know, there's a lot of tumultuous stuff going on all over the world. We just have to, and that's, it should be no surprise that the markets are acting this way. I do want to say, and it's interesting that there was a lot of tumultuous stuff going anyway, but the big thing started, just news-wise, let me get this mic adjusted, news-wise, when, originally, when the market learned of what the, you know, the debt thing, you know, what the plan was for the debt thing, that's really what really flipped the market around, and apparently, news-wise, and I'm not an expert in the news thing, but that's what a lot of people, you know, have said this continued decline was based on. Technically, it's based upon, obviously, turning points, but other than that, news-wise, it's, you know, it has something to do with the debt thing. So the market didn't mind the problems of the world, but they sure didn't like the solution, because as soon as they got the solution, you know, this thing went to hell in a handbasket. Long time ago, there was a really bad B movie called Basket Case. I'm just wondering if anybody in this audience ever saw the movie Basket Case.
No.
And if they did, we can all, he and I or she and I, we can just laugh together about it. So I'd like to hear from anybody in your audience, in the audience here, whoever saw the movie probably 20 years ago called, maybe 25 years ago, called Basket Case. We'll wait a little bit and see if somebody knows
what
that movie is about.
We'll see if anything pops up. I will say this. I watched a movie. Some cinema that was shocking. Not the Kennedy miniseries that I've been watching, mm-hmm. which is shocking in its own way. But there's a documentary... Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work. That's the name mm-hmm. of it. And this thing is, I don't even know how to describe it. It is deeply disturbing on a lot of levels. She's 75. She won't give up.
Well, what does that mean? She won't give up? That she needs to die now?
No. I mean, pursuing... being in front of an audience and working.
Oh,
and,
I see. Give up being a performer. I got you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, and she's really having a... And this is a nitty-gritty kind of documentary. I mean, it does not paint her in a good light. But yet she went along with it. Because she needed the money. Because she still lives a mm-hmm. you know, pretty big lifestyle. Okay. And she said, you know, I could quit working and just live an ordinary life, but I'm not going to do that. I like living like this. And
well, isn't Joan Rivers here in Las Vegas at the Venetian?
Oh, she may be right now. I mean, this documentary was filmed during the time that she was on the Celebrity Apprentice with Donald Trump.
Okay.
And her daughter got kicked off on, like, her and her daughter were both on, and her daughter got kicked off, like, the second episode. But Joan actually won.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, her desperation to find work, and it's just bizarre. And everyone already knows about all the plastic surgery and all the other stuff and the weirdness. And, mm-hmm. you know, she started out with Johnny Carson, and then when she got her own show, Johnny Carson blackballed her, never spoke to her again. It wasn't until once Johnny Carson blackballed her, she never
said... Why did he blackball her?
Because she got her own show on Fox. And suddenly, because he had taken her under his wing and helped get her career going, and she took over the show for him when he was away and all of that. And so she said, when I called him up to tell him the good news that Fox was giving me my own show, she goes, he just hung up on me and never spoke to me again.
Aww.
And from that day, she never set foot on an NBC stage again. Not from her choosing, mm-hmm. but because she was blackballed, until mm-hmm. she got on the Celebrity Apprentice. So,
wow.
I mean, it's a bizarre, I got to tell you guys, The Kennedy miniseries, you need to watch that for a whole other reason. But this, if you just want an hour and a half of the most bizarre thing you've ever laid your eyes on, then there it is, man. Netflix, $7.95 a month. Scream your heart out. Apparently,
well,
no
one
has seen The Basket Case.
Yes, likewise, if you want to lay your eyes on the strangest B-movie you've ever seen, go check out Basket Case. And it's really bad, but, you know, a B-movie, they don't call it B for nothing. B stands for bad. But it's good bad. It's really bad. But it's so bad, the dial goes all the way around, and it actually becomes good. Have you noticed that in things in life? Things are, oh, this is bad, this is really bad, God, this is bad, this is so terrible, and the needle keeps turning, and then finally, somehow, it goes back around to zero, and now, hey, this is really good. I can't believe how good this is. Good turns into bad, and bad turns into good.
Well, yeah, that's what, when they say, like, ooh, that's totally sick. I mean, that means, nowadays, that means that's good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see?
Okay. So, I know this isn't a show about really great B-movies, but...
hey, this Kennedy miniseries, you got to watch this thing. David, have you ever seen that? You're a little
bit... I haven't seen it. No.
You're a little bit older than I am, but I'm amazed at... I had in my head... I mean, I remember when Kennedy was shot, I was 5 years old. 6 years old, mm-hmm. So I mean, I kind of just barely remember it, you know. I remember my grandparents were very sad. Everyone was very sad. It was on the news. And so everything I really know about it, because as I went into school, it had enough time hadn't elapsed for that to get into the history books yet.
Mm-hmm.
So what I knew about it and understood about it came from things like just conversations or... You know, talk about the Zapruder film and, you know, Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey. You know, just bits and pieces. I never really knew the backstory on any of it. Joe Kennedy and how powerful he was and that family. You know, they talked about, you know, Camelot and blah, blah. That family had a curse on them, man.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. From the sister in the mental institution to the brother killed in the war to... President getting shot, the Attorney General getting shot. I mean, it just goes on, and I'm like, wow. And the man, that's the president was on so many drugs. The episode I watched last night, he was trying to get more drugs from the doctor because he legitimately was in pain. He wore like a corset, a girdle kind of a thing for his back.
Well, I don't want to get into his personal life. You know?
Well, okay. The doctor went through like 15 different drugs that he was on. And then he didn't get any relief until this German doctor comes around and starts shooting him up with amphetamines.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't doing it to get high. He was doing it because he legitimately was, or so it appears, that's how it's portrayed, in an incredible pain. And here he was, you know, running a nation and dealing with the race riots and all of this stuff. And I don't know, I'm finding it. And then I had to stop it last night and go on the internet to check some facts, because Frank Sinatra made a promise to Giancano that if he could pull in the votes in Chicago, that he'd get a free ride. And then, lo and behold, Bobby Kennedy comes out with his organized crime task force, and so now Giancano is going to kill everybody. And the Calneva Lodge, where my wife and I stayed on a vacation many years ago, Frank Sinatra owned that. And the Kennedys used to come there and visit. And the Gaming Commission ended up taking it away from Frank Sinatra. So anyway, I don't know. I'll stop and we'll talk markets. Let's do it.
Well, you were just getting warmed up there, Dwayne.
God, I was. I'm telling you guys,
I think
it's
we
good.
Maybe need a radio program about this miniseries, because you're on fire.
It's
this is
good.
The most agitated I've seen you in years.
Where were you yesterday? Hey, not one person in the audience has said a word. Can you guys even hear us? Is this thing on?
Well, if they can't,
tap.
You know. Is this mic on?
Is anybody out there? Hello?
Well, normally what would happen, let me just let the audience know, normally what would happen is while Dwayne or myself are just on a sort of a mini rant, somebody would type in and say, isn't this a program about markets?
Right.
Can we hear something about markets? Something like that.
Out of the whole room, I got one response. Yeah, we hear you.
Yeah,
gee,
we hear
guys,
you.
Your enthusiasm is...
it's overwhelming. No, really. You can feel the love. No, please, stay seated. Don't get up. Anyway, no, I unfortunately, just for whatever, it seems like I, by the time I get home, I've had so much, especially right now, things are very, very busy. We have this upcoming seminar and many other things going on. So by the time I get home, I really am not, I would really like to quiet down, because I've usually had a pretty busy day of talking and thinking and trading, and, you know, there's a lot of input. So I'm not really watching TV now, and I don't have that many hours. I get home, I have about two hours before my bedtime. And I'm sure most of the people go to bed pretty early as well if they're watching markets. And, you know, we have to get up and be clear-headed. You have to be able to think at, you know, starting from about 6 in the morning and think clearly. So I do try to get to bed early. You know, you hear people say, and I've talked about this before, people go, oh, yeah, I only need 4 hours of sleep, you know, or I only sleep 5 hours a night or whatever. That's pretty rare that somebody can do that. I actually need about 7.5 hours, good, solid 7.5 hours, maybe 8 a night to really feel fully recharged. But I know a lot of people who tell me that they only need 4 or 5 hours of sleep. Those are the people who, well, quite honestly, I don't believe. But there are some people, and my mother actually was one who, for whatever reason, she was a very light sleeper and didn't seem to have any problem going to bed and waking up, you know, 6 hours later and just having her normal day. And sometimes when people do that, they also nap during the day. And some people just have a metabolism that lets them do it. But most people need a good night's sleep. Otherwise, it starts really catching up to you.
Well, a very large percentage of people, as they grow older, have difficulty.
Need less sleep.
Well, yeah, they have difficulty. I mean, a lot of nights, I mean, after about 4 hours, I'm wide awake and I don't really want to be, you know?
Right.
It's like, hey, I have the luxury of getting 6, 7, 8 hours of sleep. I'd like to take advantage of that. But once the mind says I'm awake, you're awake. I mean, you can lay there and toss and turn, but I've learned that does you no good. That just agitates you.
Well, I'll tell you something. I agree with you, and I just want to say this, and then I promise for those of you who haven't yet typed in, we'll get right to the markets. But I talked about this a few days ago or a week ago. It's really made a big difference for me, and I've done it for a number of years. Just take it for what it's worth. When you go to bed, you lay down, you agree with yourself. I know this sounds a little weird, but you agree with yourself that no matter what problems you have, no matter what things are coming up on the next day, things that you would normally lay there and think about, you agree with yourself that this thing that you're doing, this lying down, closing your eyes, this is different than regular life. This isn't a place where you bring regular life to. You're agreeing with yourself that this is time for you to close your eyes and just relax and essentially die. Now, if you wake up tomorrow, then you can put your mind to work and go back to thinking about whatever details you have to do, whether they're problems or things you have to work with or whatever. Then you go back to that. But for this period when you're in bed right now, you essentially say to yourself, if I wake up tomorrow, then I'll give myself the luxury of thinking about my problems and working them out. But this thing that I'm doing right now, this is different than regular life. And you essentially agree with yourself. And even as your mind starts to think more about whatever, you just remind yourself, no, this is not that. This is not for that. This is a different thing. If I wake up tomorrow, you know, I'll go to thinking about that, but that's not for here. And you essentially come to a it's not a frivolous agreement. It's a full-fledged, you know, self-agreement that you're just not going to take life to bed with you. And you just lay there, and you'd be amazed that you can literally, if you sort of quote-unquote practice that, it very quickly will become a habit, and you will be able to let go of life, which is what most people's problems are when they go to bed. And literally, if you do wake up tomorrow morning, which of course 99.9% of us are going to wake up tomorrow morning, then you can go back to thinking about your problems and thinking about situations with people and other stuff that either angered you or irritated you or made you happy or whatever it is. You just forget about all of it when you go to bed, and you agree with yourself that this is a special condition that life doesn't, you don't bring life into bed with you. You completely just disappear into bed. And then when you wake up, you do that. Try that. Agree with yourself to just let go of all of life. And you'll find that you sleep much better. the sleep that you do get, even if you do wake up in the middle of the night, if you have that working agreement with yourself, it's quite much easier to get back to sleep. So that's something that I've been doing for a number of years, and I just came about it by realizing that I'm thinking the whole time I'm in bed, I'm having a great ball of fun thinking, you know, about the world and about things that have happened and stuff, and that is not good conducive sleep. You really need a deep cycle recharge, and you're not going to get it thinking. You can do all the thinking you want when you're walking around in the world, and you can do really good thinking by doing that. But in order to do that, you need this other time where you're not going to be thinking, and you have to agree with yourself that this is not the time or place for that stuff. No matter how pressing your problems are, you need to essentially die in that bed. And if you wake up tomorrow morning, then you can go back to thinking your problems. Try that out. Agree with yourself to do that. Work on that, and you will sleep much, much better. You'll feel much more recharged the next day. Even if you don't get a full night's sleep for whatever reason, you'll get better quality sleep because you're not, even when you are asleep, you're not as deeply asleep because your mind is still sharpening the pencil on some level. And that's why you feel tired the next day, or you don't have the full amount of energy, or whatever it is. So give that a shot. And with that, let's move on to the markets.
Okay.
Boy, I'm just a little tired. I just don't think I can pull this off today, Dwayne. I didn't get that much sleep last night. No, just joking.
And that was Dr. Dave's corner. Now we go to Trader
Dave.
Dave.
Trader How's Dave. That working for you? Okay. let's start from yesterday, and then we'll work our way into today.
Okay.
Let's see. Okay, yesterday we did, in fact, we did break down and sort of retest some important levels on the downside. Yes, and yesterday, thank you, we had forecast that the fifth or sixth hour yesterday would mark a top from which a initial 13-point decline would occur, then a bounce, and then a continued decline totaling approximately 27 points would occur. And the turn came 1 hour early in the fifth hour at 11:57, and that prompted us on Messenger Pro to put out a roadmap where we forecast that the market would decline, would fail at 57, which happened to be an important number to us. It would fail at 57 and decline to 30, which is 27 points. And lo and behold, the market did decline. It completed the roadmap. It went down to 30 and then subsequently went lower all the way down to 11.1375. This is, you know, that's a great example of just an ordinary roadmap and a reflected wave top.
Well,
so we had two... I'm sorry?
It was a great example of the thing we were discussing yesterday when you talked about, you know, the market kind of racing into the turn.
Oh, right. Thank you. That's the other
thing. Accelerating
into the
turn,
yeah. Yeah, this is a great example. That's the really big point. We talked yesterday about the insight that cycles are not important only from the cycle day forward, but that the market will run into those cycles, and there can be very powerful and very effective trades that you can take coming into the cycle, and then a reversal. And Dwayne also pointed out yesterday that this explains, which I thought was an astute observation, that the fact that the market runs into the cycle like that explains why people get burned so easily, because the end of the cycle is very powerful. The market will rush up into it. That will get people into the market to buy it, and then suddenly the cycle is actually ending. That move up was the end of a cycle, not the beginning of something. And then people are stuck holding positions, and the market does what you saw yesterday. Mm-hmm. After the fifth hour, it goes straight down. So this is a great example of that principle that we were talking about. And as we were talking about it yesterday on the program, the market actually did just that. It rushed up into that. Now, countering that, though, I want to say that, not countering it, but it also brings to mind why we haven't had, really in the last month and a half, any number of the free trades that we normally send out, because so many times the market has given really good indications, just like this one yesterday, but you see how it came in one unit early. When the market's weak, it'll put that top in one unit early against the six-hour forecast, and then the move is already underway, and you either miss the trade or you have to get in at lower prices. And that has happened innumerable times, not innumerable, but a number of times in the last month and a half for the trades that we send out through Bert, who's on vacation right now, I think, for until Monday of next week, through Daniel's Trading, and they send those trades out. The reason you haven't been getting them is because just about every one of these setups has done something similar to that in some way, shape, or form. It has shown us the one unit early. Remember how I've said it on the program. We've got a lot of one unit earlies. The forecast works. The market runs to the numbers, but we're not able to get in it. We're not able to set it up the way we like to see it. My personal preference is I like to trade on the on-time bar or one unit late. That's a personal preference with me. There's other people who are much more aggressive and don't care, but it's not that they don't care, but they're willing to be more aggressive. And I found over a number of years of talking to traders that my general impression is that you have to be very careful with how aggressive you are on the markets if you're going to be around for a while, because that aggressiveness can take the form of repeated losses and, you know, non-confirmation of moves, and then you're stuck in a position, you know, the same thing that we're trying to avoid. We really want to make this more like an investment, and sometimes they just don't look out perfectly. Donald Trump is not buying something every day. I'm not aligning myself with Donald Trump in a stature way, but I'm saying that he's looking carefully and thinking carefully, and he'll turn down a number of deals because they don't quite suit everything that he wants to see in a deal. He knows what he's looking for. And very much in the same way, we want to be that way too, where we know what we're looking for. And if it doesn't really work for us, well, that's too bad. You know, we just missed the trade. And I did actually miss that trade yesterday. It's too bad because I made a couple of attempts to get into it. And, you know, I was waiting for the sixth hour for another test of the 57 level. They just couldn't get up there. I think the highest they got up in the sixth hour was 54. I was trying to sell, believe it or not, 55.75 level. I was willing to sit through any further test, and they ran down, and then I really couldn't catch it. I almost, because it's the one unit early that it started on, I just didn't want to sell the silly thing. You know, I just didn't want to grab it. I will sell the silly thing if it was the one unit late. I might even if it's the on-time bar. But that one unit early, I'm hesitant to trade on. You can do it any way you want, but I did miss that. So it was a great example of several things: reflected wave top, hourly roadmap forecasting, the decline, the points value in the decline, and the fact that the market will run into these cycles. As I mentioned yesterday, it took me 12 to 15 years to be able to make a statement like I did yesterday and talk to you about how markets work within that regard. And if for those of you who are, let me be blunt, wise enough to think about what was said, and if you are into turning points and see for yourself how that works, it can add a whole nother dimension to your trading. Instead of trading from the cycle point forward, you're trading into the cycle and then from that point forward. And that's, you know, you could literally, in many cases, double the number of really effective trades. Not anybody can double the number of trades. All I have to do is just trade more often. But can you double the number of quality trades that have high probabilities of working? And the answer is yes, by doing that. For those of you who are coming to our Reflected Wave seminar, which is on August 20th and 21st, we're going to talk about that. One of many things we're going to talk about is the fact that I just told your listeners here, which about how the markets run into the cycle and out of it as well. That means that the larger the cycle, the larger the move is going to be into and then out of that cycle. So what does that tell us about the euro? Because we know that the euro is coming up on an August 22nd date. One of the things that I do as well, and this is a very powerful form of confirmation, is I want to see that run up, even if I've traded it or not. If the market does do that and starts to run into that date, already I have a form of confirmation, don't I? Because the cycle is going to occur on that date, and under most conditions, the market's going to run into that. It's powerful information. It's very usable for people who know what I'm talking about. And even if you don't quite get it, just remember this, and as you get, you know, better in your work with markets, you'll get a chance to put this to work. I've kind of toyed with this, or, you know, I've said this before, but I really am. I'm kind of a slow learner. What I do learn, I will dig deep about. I'll get into what I do know, and I will study what I know. And if you know something and I know something, you know, there might be a good chance that I know more about the thing that we both know about, because I've studied what I know, which most people don't do. Most people simply know what they know, but they don't sit back and look at what they know and play with it, flip it around, look at it at different sides, and get a real, real close, come in contact, really close contact with what they think they know. And you can learn a lot. And I've told you, as I did yesterday, I made a discovery in my guitar playing that really, really advanced my ability to do things on the guitar. And I've done that a number of times over the last 20 years in the markets. It doesn't happen every day, but the willingness to look, the willingness to take some time with what you think you already know is a really, really excellent way to advance what you know. Because there's stuff in there that you can really do something with. You know, sometimes people go, I don't know, I just know it. I just know how to do it. Yeah, I don't know. You know, that kind of thing. That's not going to take you very far. You know, I'm pretty sure that somebody like a Michael Jordan, and I'm not aligning myself with him or his stature either, because sometimes when I make these analogies, I don't want you to think that I'm saying that I'm like a Michael Jordan. I'm not. He's an extremely, just vastly talented, skilled basketball player, or was. I don't know what he's doing now. But
I think he sells underwear.
He sells underwear now? Okay. He could very easily say, you know, he has a natural skill. So in other words, his body, when he jumps in the air with that basketball, gets hang time and does all that stuff, that he didn't have to think that out. He just is able to do it. Your body has a certain form of intelligence built in, inherent to it, and it works really well with his mind, and he instinctively is able to do amazing things. But I still don't change my point. In spite of the fact that you instinctively know how to do something, that and instinct is a different whole level, I still think it's a great idea to study what you're doing and what you know, because you can make a huge leap forward by just changing the slightest little thing. Oh, look at this. And then you just make that little change, and now you're really ahead of the game. And it looks like a mystery to everybody else because they haven't looked. They're looking out there for what the magic is. They're looking outside from their eyes forward. They're trying to find the magic that you are suddenly displaying in your, you know, in your basketball playing or your baseball playing or your market calls or your whatever you do. Everyone else is looking around, what did he do? How did he get that? And they're looking from their eyes forward. I'm telling you to look from your eyes inward, backward, and that's where you're going to find it. And then everyone else thinks you found it somewhere out there, and in reality, it's already in there. The kingdom of heaven is within. A lot of people, there are people, put it this way, there are Christians who are very unhappy about that particular statement in the Bible, along with a number of other ones. But the kingdom of heaven is within, spoken by Jesus, recorded in the four Gospels, is one such statement that has bothered, and I'm not changing the subject here, but I'm using that to say, that statement has bothered a lot of Christians because it has a New Age-ness to it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean by New Age? You know, this has been around forever, by the way. The New Age Christians were around a million years ago, not a million years ago, but way back in the beginning.
The Gnostics.
And the agnostics, right. And the Gnostics,
agnostics. Gnostics, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, the Gnostics. And, you know, for those of you who know the history of it, they know that this split in Christianity has been there for forever. And, in fact, in Constantinople, when the Bible, the various books of the Bible were put together, those people were very aware of other books that were floating around. You know, the Bible is a series of books, many of which, like Adam and Eve, the story of Adam and Eve, there was thousands of them. There still are. They selected from those. And many other Genesis, there's a lot of different Genesis floating around out there. And there were then, the beginning of the world, all kinds of stuff. You check your history, you'll see this is to be the case, as we understand it at this point. But the fact that I'm making is that they carefully selected the books, and they wanted it to not reflect, as best as they could, the New Age. They wanted it to be how they saw Christianity to be. Well, a few things slipped in, and one of those few things was the kingdom of heaven is within. Now, those are words that Jesus spoke. The reason I'm bringing this up is, number one, there's some interesting history behind it, but that saying surely has some meaning. whether you are a person who believes in Christianity as preached at the most conservative level, which would be that, as an example, you know, if you ask somebody who's very, very conservative about the Bible, you know, go to the Bible, the kingdom of heaven isn't within, they're going to say, well, that means within our midst. They're just going to finish the sentence. Jesus didn't quite finish his sentence, so they're going to finish it for him. The kingdom of heaven is within our midst. It's not just within, but it's within our midst. That means a whole different thing than what is recorded in the Bible. Be careful about people who change, who need to end the sentences of great leaders so that they can make their case. Anyway, that saying has a profound meaning in my life. And as you can tell by all the things that we've talked about on the radio for so many years, there's so much truth to that. I wonder really how far it goes. I wonder if it doesn't go a whole lot farther than just the things we've talked about, being the idea of looking at your own life, the idea of being aware of yourself, coming in contact, direct contact with what you're doing in the moment, who you are in that moment, attitudes, feelings that go through you, and then later studying what you know, the things we've talked about. Because I've had so many powerful insights and revelations personally and in other areas of my life from that the phrase the kingdom of heaven is within seems like it could be downright true at this point.
You know, now this, David, this might be something even you don't know, because I certainly didn't. The kingdom of God is within you. Christianity, not as a mystic religion, but as a new theory of life. Guess who wrote that book?
I have no idea.
Leo Tolstoy.
Well, there you are. And Leo Tolstoy was a famed philosopher from a long time ago. Some would even say a mystic.
1894. It's an e-book. Yeah. I've never read it. I just stumbled across it Googling here. But
okay.
Interesting.
But think about that. I think that's very interesting. It's become a very meaningful thing to me. It has for many, many years, but in later years, more and more so. And for whatever your age is, you know, you start out life looking out there, and everything is out there. Everything's out there. You're dealing with out there. And then later in life, if things go properly, or and in many cases, people tend to realize, well, there's a little in here, but there's an awful lot out there. Still, it's out there, but there's a little in here. And then a little later, well, there's quite a bit more in here, but there's still quite a bit out there. And then slowly but surely, the in here, if you could live long enough, becomes bigger and bigger, and the out there becomes less and less, until you could literally wake up one day and say the words, the kingdom of heaven is within. So that's kind of how I feel personally. I'm not anywhere near the point where I can say that 100% and have that force and that the power of the complete truth there, but that statement has meant more and more to me as I've gotten older, and not just age, but the fact that there's been so many things that have happened to me, proving to me in a way that is not verbal nor is it mental, proving to me in a way that is existential, or whatever the word is, in directly, you know, a direct perception of that truth in so many different ways. So I just thought I'd bring that up, you know, because we're talking about you studying what you already know and being able to take, you know, have a rocket ship, something that advances you. And very much like I told you about something, as it can happen in any area of your life, in my guitar playing, I discovered something, I told you about this yesterday, that like the second top-level guitar player literally on the planet, somebody, like a fellow by the name of Greg Howe, who's just an amazing talent, it actually blew him away. Now, how is it that I, a skinny Jewish guy that is not a great guitar player, could come up with something, a technique that allows me to do something on the guitar that he had never thought, well, there it is. Where did I get it? Was I looking out there? Did I see something out there that I had to drag into here to do it? No, that's not how I got that. I got it by looking at what I was doing, what I already knew. The kingdom of heaven was within for me. I didn't have to go out there. I was looking at my own in there and found it. And it was such a great discovery that had he not known me, for me, he would, if he saw me playing and do that, he'd be looking out there, for the answer. See? And it, because it looks like a mystery, but it really is in here. So anyway, I'm just bringing that up because it's been a very powerful thing for me. It's made in the year 2010. I discovered the roadmap insight by studying what I already knew, and many other discoveries have happened in the markets for me, and including now just with this other area with guitar. And I just cannot stress enough. Most people won't do it. To be blunt with you, most people don't care. Most people don't care. They just want food, money, and sex.
Yeah.
If you give people, you know, when they had the circuses, you know, remember, just give the people the bread and circuses from the Roman times. Just give people bread and circuses, and that keeps them happy.
Let them eat
well,
cake.
Well, he had it almost right. Hmm. Food, money, and sex. Those three things are the three squares, the three magnetic centers that will keep you pinned in this life. That's what they do. They're just, you got one of those threes working for you, or all three. So in order to make some progress, you're going to have to put food, money, and sex down for a little while and take a look, like I say, at your own life. And you don't have to do it 24/7, but it sure can make a tremendous difference. Because, and like I said, most people don't care. They're interested in food, money, and sex. But at some point, maybe one or two people will say, well, I'm just going to give that 10 minutes. I'm going to sit down and take a look at something that I already know and think about what I know and even maybe make a list of what I think I know about that. I'm just going to be meditative, so to speak, not to use a New Age word, but I'm just going to think about what I know. And just even the first round of it, you might find something. But even if you don't find anything, it's a skill set that you presently don't have. And it's something that can be very small doorways that lead to very, very large rooms. For me, even though you may not know it, for me, it's personally a truth. And I'm telling you that, but I mean, I don't need to convince you of it. For me, it's a very profound truth. And I've passed it on before. I pass it on again to encourage you to do that in your own life. And you may end up reaping some great, great benefits from it. You may have something that you can even come back to us on the show and tell us about at some point. It can be in any area of your life, something as mundane as playing a silly guitar, all the way up to your relationship with the universe and with the Creator. It can be used on any different level. So give that a shot. Now I will move on.
Okay, well, hang on one second. The scripture that you quoted... in Luke 17:21, the context that it's used in, Jesus just healed the lepers, and he healed 10, but only like one came back to say, you know, thanks. And he goes like, well, where are the other 9? And the guy goes, hey, I don't know, I'm just thankful. And he says, okay. But then the Pharisees come along, and and I'm reading from the King James, because if I go from any other one, then people go, oh, that's whack, you can't do that. Okay, so I don't get me started on King James. And when he was demanded of the Pharisees when the kingdom of God should come, he answered them and said, the kingdom of God cometh not with observation. Neither shall they say, lo here or lo there, for behold, the kingdom of God is within you.
Boy, I'm telling you, does that not give you the chills?
Yeah.
Was I not just talking about it seems like it's out there, it looks like it's out there, and as later in your life it becomes more and more in there, and he's saying either looking for it out there, it's not out there, and lo and behold, the kingdom of heaven is within. Boy, you know, that rates right up there with some of the better chills I've had. I've got a fever. No. So that's brilliant. It's exactly what we talk about. You're looking for it out there, and it's right here. So if it's true on such a ordinary level as looking at your own knowledge of things and studying that, how much more so is it true with relationship to what he said there? And I realize, listen, I've been through the Bible, as you know, I'm sure we all have. There's thousands of arguments. People try to put it all together to make it all work. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that believe every single word in the Bible is the inspired word of God. It's not. I'm here to tell you. And I don't want, you can love me or hate me for it. There's quite a bit of merely administrative things going on in the Bible. When Paul as an example, is simply writing letters to Ephesians and Corinthians and all that stuff. Those are just administrative things. That was a man writing a letter and keeping his church going.
Yeah, you will stir some ire because a lot of people, you know.
I know, but listen,
I know.
There's you can go look through the Bible yourself. There's all kinds of things that are merely administrative things that were going on or commentary about something in the past. But having said that, that's not to, this. I'm not trying to chop down Christianity. I'm certainly not. I am a Christian.
No,
I'm pointing out that the Bible, conversely, is filled with enormous God-inspired words. And certainly, the four Gospels are filled to the brim with them. And so, there's a lot of arguments. My point originally was that there's a lot of arguments in religion that tries to tie it all together. And it's very difficult. It's a big book. And there's a lot of different books that were all put together by men in Constantinople, by politicians in Constantinople. Read your history.
I trust me, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying this to you. I'm saying this to anybody who wants to listen.
No, I mean so I have that whole argument.
People try to tie it all together in a nice little bow to make it all work. It's very difficult to do that because there's an enormous number of different sources for the material that came into the Bible. If you come from it from the point that it's all, every last word of it is the inspired word of God, then you're going to be forced to try to make all those different things somehow work together. And thus we have about 50 different versions of Christianity trying to do just that, trying to somehow make all those books somehow tie together. Well, he said this here, yes, but over here, Paul says this. Well, I know, but over here in Ephesians, the guy said to them, well, yes, but that doesn't, you're saying you're trying to make it all work together so that you can sleep on the idea that it's all one clear message. And the Bible has many different messages from many different sources in it. And so when you try to put it all together to make it one cohesive thing, it becomes a little messy. And you better start looking at the parts of the Bible that mean something to you and speak something to you and move you rather than trying to make the whole book all come together under some pretty little package called a religion. Try that sometime. Instead of making it have to be perfect, find the parts in it that really speak to you and perfect that in your life rather than running around and trying to put it all together to make it work for you. Now, love me or hate me on that, but check it out for yourself. Read it and tell me if you think God wrote every single word in there. And think with that in your mind while you're reading it. Go read the Old Testament. I'm not talking about the prophets. Go read in the New Testament, you know, in the Paul stuff, all that stuff. Really? That's, you know, we're just, like I said, there's an enormous amount of merely administrative and other types of phrasing that you could use for the types of things that are going on in there. And again, the purpose is to say to you, this is just my opinion, so don't kill me for this. My opinion is simply this. You shouldn't be trying to tie it all together, because when people do that, ultimately, it's like the fellow, as an example, the fellow that was trying to predict, you know, he was putting all, trying to tie it all together, come up with that date. And how many times this century has somebody done that? Over 100 different people have publicly tried to do that. And they're doing that because of the belief that the whole thing is this one mystical book that was all sprinkled with, you know, the hand of God. Unless you want to agree that everything is the hand of God.
Well,
and I'll say yes, I agree with you.
I do believe that the Bible is the inspired word of God. I do believe that. I also know the freaky way and conditions in which it all came to be bound together in one leather volume. I know the history and background of King James. A lot of people probably don't. You know, a lot of people just, they've always, you know, that King James Bible, that's what I was raised on.
Quiet market reacting enough.
Good. In fact, I'm not even, you, those of you out there, now again, I said, I believe, unlike David, that the entire Bible is the inspired word of God. And the conditions under which it came to be bound together in one book is beyond bizarre. What David said about these people being summoned, that's correct. Some of the ones who were summoned didn't even bother to show up. Okay, how do you factor that in? Okay, well, gosh, what if one more guy had come and there had been one more vote to say, let's include this book and leave this one out? See, you've got to have faith in the divine nature of God, and that, you know, just start your search. I'm not trying to convince anyone that the Bible is not the inspired word of God. I just said I believe that it is. But I think you would do yourself a great service to better understand the history of how your Bible came to be, under what conditions. Now, you might end up thinking something else, but I'm not trying to convince you of that. I just think you should be well educated. And most people do not know, most Christians, most people who carry a King James Bible don't know how it came to be. They just know that's what they were always told to read, and that's what their grandmother read, and their mother read, and that's what they read, and that's the end of it. Okay? So, anyway.
Yeah, no, my point again was just that the it's difficult because people, you know, my whole subject came up just, and I know we'll move back up to the markets here, but my whole subject came up because I was pointing out that the kingdom of heaven is within and how that has made such a profound impact on my life. And that has spoken to me, and that has made a huge difference in my life. But there's many people who could look at other parts of the Bible and counter that, and before you know it, you've countered the counter, and then you've countered that, and then before you know it, you have all the different religions screaming all their different versions of the Bible, because they're all countering everyone else's counter. And in the end, you have 50 different religions that, you know, need to war with each other or whatever. And it doesn't need to all be put into a pretty package. It's practically, if not virtually or completely impossible, to make it all make actual sense when you try to connect all what you think are the dots between these separate things. God speaks awfully clearly, does he not, in the Ten Commandments. Do you need a scholar to undo the Ten Commandments for you and explain to you what any one of those Ten Commandments means? Unless you believe that Moses just chipped that away in the stone himself.
Well, Jerry makes a good point. He, you know, Paul preached from the King James Version of the Bible. So there you go.
There you are.
That was good, Jerry. I'm glad you lightened the mood there. Thank you for that.
Even he used the King James Version. That's like, we have a magician out here named Lance Burton, and he used to be at the Monte Carlo Casino, and one of his jokes on the stage is that, you know, I want to give away this magic kit to somebody in the audience, a young kid, because he says, when I was young, my mom gave me a Lance Burton magic kit. Well, how could he give him a Lance, because he's old, yeah, whatever. Anyway, so that's like Paul, you know, preaching from the King James Version.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was my point, just that take the part that really moves you, anything that you take that is inspirational to you can take you all the way home. It doesn't have to be perfect in a physical form and have all the little things connect up perfectly for you. That's what religions are trying to do, and that's what they battle over. You know, he was hung on a cross. No, he was on a tree. No, he was, you know how it goes. We don't have to go into all that stuff. And it turns into insanity, quite honestly. It just becomes insanity. Religion makes many people insane.
They start killing each
other.
I don't
know if you've noticed that.
Yeah. Yeah, they start killing each other over it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, having said all that, it was supposed to be inspirational, what I was saying, which was that there's a part right out of the Bible that really means something to me. Don't worry about all the other pieces if they don't all connect up. Take the part that really inspires you and run with it, because it can all take you there. Whatever part you want to. It doesn't all have to be, you know, if something doesn't speak to you, if, you know, there's some phrase in there that doesn't, fine. But for me, the kingdom of heaven within it has really made a huge impact on my life without me making an effort to do so. It just is part of something that has really made a difference for me. And I invite people to find their own places and times in the Bible that really mean something to them. Certainly, in the four Gospels, there are deeply, profoundly moving, inspirational things that you might not even understand. You know, who can, until but it still can move you, and it can still inspire you, and it can still change your life. That's really the miracle, is a changed life. Not the miracle is not the ability to put the Bible together and somehow make it all make sense if you just think of it the way that I'm telling you. The real miracle is a changed life. That's the miracle. So
the real miracle of the Bible is not the topical reading of the words, but the ability of the Holy Spirit to truly open it up and for it to become a fountain of knowledge, different passages at different times of your life. That's the magic. That's the marvelous. That's the magnificent. That's the majestic.
Well said.
Okay.
Okay.
Back to
well, how do you like this little? How do you like this little market program we're on today?
This is
you guys,
good.
I hope you're new. This is how we talk about the markets.
Well, you know, one last thing, and then we'll move on. I was really disturbed by this the other day. One of the largest Christian organizations, denominations, I forget what it's called even now, the Dutch PK or something, they did a survey, and something like 40% of their ministers are atheists. Huh? Well, it was bizarre. I read the thing twice to make. I thought maybe it was like from The Onion, you know, like it was a lampoon or something. But mm-hmm. it was a very real thing. They're paying these men to be, and they're going like, yeah, you know, I kind of used to buy it, but I don't buy it. It was I don't know. It was bizarre. It was right up there with Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work. But on a more
you know,
deeply disturbing level.
It's funny you say that. When people said, you know, I don't buy it, I don't buy it. I just want to say this one more time, and then I promise we're going to move on to the markets. I mean, it's just this is a big subject. The more biased you are for looking for your inspiration out there, the less you're going to have it in there, inside. And the less you keep looking for it out there, the more your light is going to burn brighter from in there. That's kind of how I view it. You know, we start out looking out there for the inspiration and for this and that and the other, and slowly but surely, like I said before, if you're, I believe this, if you're growing, you're going to find more and more of your inspiration in there. In there doesn't mean you, meaning that you're becoming a great God or something, nothing like that, but the inspiration for life-changing insight and insight that can cover any part of your life is going to come from within. You're going to see for yourself, if you haven't already, that that's how it actually ends up working. So it's a wonderful idea to think about, and don't worry about fighting over the Bible. If you want to fight over the Bible, then you're just like any other person on earth, because that's all people want to do, is fight. Fighting is their favorite profession. If somebody tells you, you know, this is what he meant when he said that, that's fine. Just let it go. Because all people really want to do is fight. They just want to pick a fight. They want to change your opinion. You know, that leads to nowhere. And you can be living, you can be a night watchman and have a profoundly inspiring life. Never once having ever spoken the word Jesus Christ, nor speaking the word the Bible, nor having argued about Jesus Christ or the Bible. Now, the reason I say that is because the kingdom of heaven is within. And the person who said that, who is Jesus Christ, said it for all times and all places, including people who might not ever know about him. It was true with or without him standing there saying it. It's true for all times and places. That's why I say a night watchman might not even know the name Jesus Christ, but can be living a profoundly inspired life, a deeply spiritual life.
So, he also said, no man comes to the Father except through the Son. He said that
I'm sorry?
Too. He also said, no man comes to the Father
right.
except through
right.
the
and
Son.
Right, and we can get into, you know, again, it goes back to the religious arguments. Anybody can take, you know, if you want to, you can interpret these things any number of ways. And by the way, your ability or lack of ability to interpret what's being said, or let's just say your ability to interpret, is obviously directly related to your level of life understanding. So a person who is at a particular level will read and understand on his own level, will he not? A person who is on a higher level of understanding will understand it in a different way.
See, what I found is the people who need to get upset and argue are the people who don't really know what they believe. because you're, see, I don't have, I'm not stirred to the point that I need to, you know, like, have a confrontation with you or someone else that doesn't believe the way that I believe, because I'm secure in that in which I believe. And I've had long talks with people on the radio program about this, back last year and the year before, about going and sitting in a park with a blank piece of paper and write down what you believe. Because everyone walks around with these beliefs, but do you really believe it? What do you really believe? And why do you believe it? Well, I believe it because that's what I was taught. Oh, okay. So if I teach you red is white, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I was trying to get people to do a little bit of soul searching to figure out what it was, so that they could, one, know what it is they believe, and then be secure and confident in that belief. Okay? Because I'm looking at this article here. Yesterday it was the second most shared article on the BBC. You know how people forward things and share them and all of that kind of stuff. And it has to do with, in Holland, the Reverend Klaus Hendricks, blah, blah. A study by the Free University of Amsterdam found that 1 in 6 clergy in the PKN, that's their big denomination there in Holland, and 6 other smaller denominations were either agnostic or atheist. Now, see, there's people who, they got into a career and they didn't really know what they believed. They didn't sit in the park with a blank piece of paper and fill a page. They whether it was emotions, whether it was some other external influence, parental pressure, whatever it was. Anyway, so let's move on.
Well, there you are. See, we travel far, far and wide on this
program.
We've
been to Galilee and back. From Galilee to Wall Street. Here we go. To Holland.
Well, take the inspirational part out of that. Don't worry about the fighting part or the interpretive part of it. If it means something to you, take it and run with it. Okay, so let's get back to the S&P 500.
Okay, we will. The really interesting part of this article and what really struck me is that these guys are not stepping down, right? The 1 in 6. They plan to continue to do their job.
So what do they get up and say? I'm an atheist, thank God. What exactly do you say in front of people, in front of God-fearing people?
Well, they just begin to teach in some kind of humanistic, universalist type of fashion, I guess. Okay. I really don't know. Okay. I really don't know. It's just, to me, I would think, you know, when a guy comes to this realization, he's like, oh, wow, yeah, I'm stepping down because I'm not sure that I really believe that. But no, these guys are just, I don't know, maybe they get paid well. Maybe they got good health benefits. I don't know, but they're not quitting. So, anyway, moving on.
Well, that is really interesting. I'd like to listen to one of those sermons.
Yeah, we'll find one. There's got to be one out there on iTunes somewhere.
There's got to be one. Somebody's doing that. All right, anyway, so with regard to the S&P today, we've had a trend day up, which is a one-directional market move for the whole session. This is very good for trend followers, people who know how to do that, and we've talked a little bit about trend following, but we won't go into any of that today. Actually, we will go into it a little bit in just a little bit here. But so it's interesting because we have the possibility today of another roadmap type of setup and reflected wave turning point here. And while we've been talking here, if we do move up just a little bit higher here, we've made a high of 60. Oh, let me just double check this. We've made a high of 65 today. If we do double top there, or maybe make a slightly higher high, that would help me to issue another roadmap. So I'm hoping we can see that while we're on the program here, depending on when it happens, of course.
If we don't get struck by lightning first.
What's that?
I said if we don't get struck by lightning first.
Yeah. Well, there we are. The punishment's coming. So we're waiting right here.
That high yesterday that we had going into the sixth hour.
Yes.
We took that out while we were talking. Is that what you just said?
Right. We have taken that out, and this is due to yet again another cycle that is at work, And let's do this. Let's review a couple other markets, and then we'll get back to this one and give it a little bit more time here to work around what it's doing. If we do, I can at least say this, that into today's last hour, although it's not very far from where we are right now, if we do go up any further and give us, and that sets something up for us, because I would prefer to see slightly higher prices. We may not see them because the market has a lot of selling pressure. Even though we're going up, there can be a lot of selling pressure that keeps the market from going to its natural levels, even during an advance. So one thing I would say is that for people who might be able to trade this later is that the natural price level for the market in the last hour of today is 1152. That doesn't mean it has to stop at 1152, but if we're above 1152, we would want to, putting any roadmaps aside, you know, any larger targets like yesterday's 27-point deal, we want to take a trade from any higher short position that we get into and trade it into today's last hour, you know, plus or minus an hour time frame. Is 1152 is the natural level for price movement. And I just want to say this, that the whole concept of natural price levels that are due at specific periods of time was itself an insight that I got, again, not from going out and grabbing new information, but by looking at what I already knew and playing with that and saying, okay, let me think about that, and then finding some little sliver in there and following that little sliver down, and you can do amazing things. You can find amazing things. It's right there. All you have to do is look. That's it. I won't keep hammering you on it, but I mean, I am telling you it's there in some level of your life on some subject matter if you'll just take the time. Like I said, most people, food, money, and sex. That's all they need, and they will never do that. So try to be a little different. Okay, so I would like to see if I can. With regard to this 1152 deal that they touch in today's sixth hour, or last hour, sorry, last hour of today is the natural position for that. What I would like to see is I don't want to see it occur. We'll put it this way, if it does occur in the sixth hour, if we do test it in the sixth hour, then I'm not going to trade to it from any level in the seventh hour. I want to see it not touch it going into the sixth hour, then I would have a very secure trade, trading short, as an example, to it, or trading long to it, for that matter, into the seventh hour. But I don't. If it gets touched in the sixth hour, since that's the one unit early, then I would leave it alone for me.
Okay.
So that's one little indication that we have, and that could actually work out to be a nice trade if the market shows us that. By the way, the principle by which you can call a specific price level to occur at a specific time is so preposterously simple that it would blow your mind. And yet, like I said before, it looks like magic because, and you're looking out there, where can this be? It was such an easy thing. Of course, you have to see it, but the principle is profoundly, not complicated, it's profoundly simple to be able to do that. I've done it a million times on the program.
We've got saying time that certain if you want to show us.
What's that?
I said, we have time if you want to show us.
Oh, well, I'd be very happy to. Here we go.
Iris has a question. She's okay. Watching our weekly zone up here at 67.68.
Yes.
And she would like to know if you think the market has the stuff to get up there today.
Well, first of all, I want to say hi, Iris, because there's so few women that are involved in markets overall, A, and I don't know really why that is necessarily. B, in this program, we have the vast majority of listeners are men, mm-hmm. So it's very refreshing to hear from a woman. And C, I don't know what the hell the market's going to do. No, I'm just joking. I'd like to answer your question as best I can. What was your question again?
If you think 67.68 is reachable in today's session, 1167.
I don't have a forecast for it being reached. I guess that would be the best way I would say it. And as we're talking, we're breaking down to 50. You know, we're getting close to that 52 level. So,
right now,
I'm sorry, I don't have a direct answer for you in the form of a forecast. I don't like making. You know, if you're new to the program, I don't know if you're not. But for me personally, I don't like making generalities, too many generalities about the market. Like, yeah, you know, it might get up there, maybe not. I need to know as a fact that it's going to do a certain thing or not, as according to what I, you know, how I view the market. And if I don't have that, I would rather not comment on it. So I don't know. I do know, however, Iris, that if it did get up to those levels, I would be interested in potentially trading off of those levels. A really wonderful setup would be, for what we talked about earlier, is that if the market in today's sixth hour does not touch, we're in the fifth hour right now, but if we don't touch 52, I don't care if we touch it now. In fact, we just made a swing low of 53.50. If we don't, even if we touch it now, it's fine. But if we don't touch it in the sixth hour, and we were to go up to 57 or 67, 68, I'd be very interested in potentially selling that level for the decline down to 52. So rather than give you a forecast that it would go up to 67, which I don't have, here's an if-then statement. I would, if it did go up there, I would very much want to be a seller for the decline, very much like yesterday's 27-point decline against 57 down to 30. I would want to trade this down from 67 down to 52. So if they give that to us, and I apologize, I don't have any more direct answer about whether I think it would get up there or not. If you're long in the market, not you necessarily, but anybody, and you're holding for higher prices, I would, you know, you manage your position and trade it like it's a trend. But if they show you something that doesn't look right or whatever, don't let this market go against you, because we all know that it can move 27 to 30 points in a very short order. There's no reason for you to sit through that and hope for prices to come back and all that stuff. My preference would be to see the market. I'd like to see it go up higher only because I'd like to take that trade. That would be a really nice setup for a trade a little later today. So we'll see if that works out. Let me see if there's anything else. I think for the S&P, that's probably all we have right now. But there's, you know, there's quite a bit in there. There's a number of possibilities for today in the S&P still, even though we're at we're halfway through the day so far. Let me just take a quick look at the dailies. And then also, let's take a quick look. We talked about the euro a number of times, and I wanted to remind people with regard to the euro that we do have this August 22nd date, which is actually the week of August 22nd. And on that date, we are looking for the market to have a very, very powerful reversal. And so if you're following the idea that, you know, the what we talked about yesterday, that larger cycles, the market will run into those, then we are very close, are we not, right now, only a couple of weeks away from the week of August 22nd, for the market to start to do what we're talking about. In most cases, that's what it will do. It will have a move both into and out of. So we want to watch the euro carefully now, because there may be an important move starting almost immediately into that larger cycle. So keep that in mind, and we'll talk about it on the show as we continue on. We also mentioned, I'm actually not 100% sure if it was on the show or on our deal here, but somebody could correct me if I'm wrong or right, but I mentioned to someone, whether it's on this radio program, I don't know where, that roughly 140, let me get the exact number here, that 140.86, I think it was on the program, was due to be touched on August 11th. Today is August 11th, and the low that the market made today, they attempted it, was 140.98, about 12 ticks above 140.86. Now, well, I've told you before that if they can't touch that price, especially into tomorrow, the one day late, that's bullish. That means that there's buying pressure, even as the market's going down, that buying pressure is being shown by the market not being able to reach that price. So that's one of the ways that I read the market, is by, in the vast majority of cases, it will hit the price and spike it, go through it, whatever. But on those occasions like here, where it's unable to touch it, the August 11th price of 140.86, today's low is 140.98, and I'm not sure if that includes Globex. Let's take a look at Globex and see if they went any lower something that maybe one of the listeners can tell us, because I don't have my Globex set up, if that was the low on Globex, or Dwayne, maybe you can do that.
Yeah, I can. Hang on.
Can you tell me what the low on the overnight was?
Sure.
They're showing, on mine, it's showing 140.98, and this, of course, is the September contract.
Okay. On Globex, the low was... Yeah, that was it.
140.98. Okay. So that indicates that there's bullish buying pressure there. You can see the market attempted to go down on August 11th to that price, and it was on this program that I mentioned this a few days ago. And the fact that if they can't quite touch it, that tells us that that actually is an early sign for bullishness, and that would mean bullishness potentially into the cycle that we talked about, the August 22nd. We might be trading up from here, and this would normally mean the market would be going higher. We'll see. We'll talk about this over the next day or so, but there's some decent, this actually could be a pretty decent setup for higher prices right here and right now on the euro, not the pair, but just the single euro contract. And let me think if there's anything else we'll cover in market, or Dwayne, do you have any observation on a market that you wanted to talk about?
You know,
whether it's silver or gold or...
Well,
I have an observation
gold.
I'd like to make on those markets after you're done.
Okay. When silver was kind of a runaway train here a while back, and the exchanges clamped down and, you know, went full
yes.
margin
yeah.
on everything, now today they've done that on gold.
Yeah. No, I know. And gold is starting to show some of the same indications.
And I don't know if you heard the first part of the show we talked about. The news is that France and Italy, when the markets closed today, are going to ban short uh-huh. selling.
Yeah, that's usually a sign to go short, just for people who just want to know that. I can't remember a time in my life of being in the markets that when the government tries to ban short selling, you need to be short something that would appreciate on the market going down, because the market will go down. Every time I can remember the market doing that. And they did it in September 11th. For those of you who were watching markets at that time, many of you may not, because it's, you know, maybe you started markets 5 years ago, but they didn't ban it, but they came on TV with very solemn faces saying, you know, please don't bet against America, you know, don't sell short on the markets, this terrible tragedy has happened, you know, let's try to all get together here. The guy hadn't closed, the air hadn't fully left his lungs, and when the markets opened up, they tanked. And they just keep tanking. And that's happened a number of times on currencies. They've locked currencies and then said, no, we're not going to allow any, you know, this is the ceiling for this currency. Can't go any higher. Or no new buying. I can't remember which one it was. But whatever direction they don't want it to go into, trust me, that's a trade. That's a news trade. That's the kind of trade that you just want to be in that direction. So we need to figure out a way how to short Europe.
In 2008, here in the U.S., SEC Chairman Christopher Cox had a press conference, and they outlawed naked short selling on a number of financial stocks.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't allowed to do it. Now, the markets overall fell considerably, but there's a really, and I talked about this at the beginning of the show, there's a huge difference between what France and Italy are going to do, because naked short selling is already illegal. Okay, and so he was coming out and going, okay, you can't do this. You already aren't supposed to do it, but now you really, really, really can't do it.
Yeah, there's a difference between that and just saying we're not allowing any kind of short sell.
Yeah,
that's just outright fear. The government is dead afraid that the market's going to go up, and they're trying to stop or go down. And, you know, I'm just telling you that my experience has been every time I've seen that happen, the market goes right in that direction. So just watch that. You don't have to trade it. That's not something I would necessarily tell you to trade.
Now, if they do, in fact, ban short selling, whether it's temporary, whatever it is, and however, I haven't read anything that details how they're going to police this and how long it's going to last or any of that. But the only way the way the market would fall would be simply from people liquidating positions that they own, because I don't think, you know, to come in and short a stock you know, the way that's supposed to work is that you're borrowing the stock from a broker in order to be able mm-hmm. to, you know, you have to own it to be able to sell it short. That's mm-hmm. the way it's supposed to work. There's a 3-day settlement rule here in the U.S. on that, which they don't hold them to. But if they were, yeah, because I can't believe they're going to tell people who own, you know, you own, you know, 1,000 shares of whatever, and you simply want to get out. Okay, you're not short selling.
You're not short selling. You're liquidating a long position. You have to have a position for them to let you out.
Yeah. So
they're not going to let you initiate new short sales, though.
What? So, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. When you see a government take this type of a draconian measure,
right.
It's going to just blow up in their face. I'm just trying
right,
to think
exactly.
what the mechanics are of how the market will go lower if they hold their guns on this.
Well, they can stop the market from going down by making short selling not happen, and then some people will want to buy the market because it can't. I mean, what a great bet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It can't
yeah.
go down. Why don't we should just buy the market because the government won't allow it to go down. But what I'm saying is that in the end, the government almost always loses that bet. Let's say they hold it, you know, the rule for 2 weeks or a month or whatever. The market ends up going down anyway. So I don't like the idea. I certainly, for me anyway, wouldn't want to be the guy that says, well, that's a great deal. If it can't go down, I'll just buy it. It's got to go up. And, you know, maybe that works this time. But I wouldn't want to. And I'm not a news trader, you know, and all that. But I wouldn't want to be in that the game on that
level.
It'll
be interesting to watch play out.
It would. Speaking of gold and silver, I had mentioned over the last couple of days that we had many years ago had come out with a report about gold and silver, what the market, we felt in 2001 the market was going to go up for many years. We put a report out, and I sent that report to Dwayne, and we ultimately ended up taking our own advice, but later in that market. And I wanted to show Dwayne that, and I sent him our statements because we've talked an awful lot about gold and silver on this program on and off. And it really, these are markets that are, as Michael Bork has said, are highly emotional markets. They really, I can't think of a better classification for what they are. And they really have shown that in these, you know, parabolic advances that they've had that just continue to run. So, and anyway, we had gone long, and I showed this to Dwayne just as an inspirational thing. Certainly, there's a bit of a brag in it, but it's very inspirational in the sense that we bought off of a very long-term reflected wave bottom, multi-year reflected wave bottom. And that meant to us that the market was going to go up for many years. So, in a way, what we did is we kind of bought the silly thing. That's what we did. We just said, you know what, we'll get in wherever we want to get in, but this thing's going higher. And we sent Dwayne our statements yesterday for both gold and silver. And Dwayne, what are we in? What's the name of the, I don't have it right in front of me, the shares that we have in that? We didn't buy the actual market. We bought the shares.
The Spider Gold Trust?
Yeah, that's what we bought.
And the iShares Silver Trust?
Yeah, these are the actual statements right here that he's showing on the thing here.
I don't know if you want me to show them or not. I can pull them off the screen if you don't want them showed.
No. I don't mind them being shown. I mean, we sent them to you to have them there. Right now, you know, the top one shows the silver, which was at one point up at $50. But you can see where we were buying it at you know, various dollar levels. And if you scroll down, the net on both of these positions right now, this is like a trend following trade. This is where we own something for a long period of time, is we're sitting at about roughly around $260,000 in gains between gold and silver. For some reason, gold, although it's at new highs, the shares have not responded, you know, close to one for one as they did on the silver. And I don't know why that is. The gold should actually be in a much better position than it actually is here, but the shares have not, and I've talked to other people, and their shares have not gone up either as much as the gold has. So I'm not sure what to make of that. But what we did with this, and I'm pointing this out to show you that this can really be done. We simply bought over time. We started on silver. We've started buying at $9. And then we bought a whole bunch more. We're looking at gold right here. We bought a whole bunch more at $17. I think silver's around wherever it is today, 38 or something. And we just held that position. The only thing that kept us in is it's not a technical trade really directly, but the trade was put on because of a large-term reflected wave bottom, which meant that the market would go up for many years. The same way that this quarterly top that reflected wave called indicates that the market would go sideways to lower for several quarters. So that's how we put this trade together. It's like, you know what? It's going up for years. We're not going to worry about where we buy so much. We kind of did worry about it, and we got in late. But we
started accumulating in, what, 09?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
So we took this is obviously each one of these shares is we're buying in some size here, but the net of it all is that not the net in dollars, but the idea that I want to present is that look, if you have a large turning point that's coming in, and you know that means the market's going to go up, however it gets there for several years, forget all the technicals, ins and outs, and tiny little forecasts. You can place a trade like this, and we've been in this for years, obviously. It's 2011 now, but I finally decided that we've talked enough about this, and I wanted to show that we're still in this, we're still holding, and I've mentioned before that we've been in this trade. And to be honest with you, I'd like to be out of the silver. I'm not crazy about, we may have some more upside a little on the silver, but I think the positions right now that we have are, they're pretty much as good as they need to be. I don't want to sit through much more on the silver, but I wouldn't mind holding the gold. And for some reason, again, the gold shares have not reflected the same. The gold broke up and made a new high at 1800, and these shares are not quite as high as I think they should be, and what others think they should be as well. But I hope that's inspirational to you, because that's a really good example of a trend following trade. And that's why I want to be out of silver, because I think the trend ended. And we probably will get out of it soon. But gold, the trend is still up.
Gold's down 2% today. But again, with the increased margins, a lot of people are probably... Well, we'll see what happens over the next...
We'll see. Well, we know what happened last time, don't we?
Yeah, we sure do.
So, with silver, I mean. Mm-hmm. And so when they changed that, gold took a big hit. So this may be the last time we can talk about these profits as you see them. So we'll let you know. If you see me wandering in the world's largest park in Arizona, whatever, then,
with a sleeping bag.
With a sleeping basket, then you can get me.
I'll bring you in, get you some cold water.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Dwayne. Any other markets that you are looking at, Dwayne, that you want to refer to, talk about?
No, nothing particular for me. Now, Brad did ask, and I thought it was very interesting the way that he said this, and very nice. He says, could you give us another clue about identifying the secret to time and price turning points?
He wants another clue about identifying time and price turning points. Does he mean directly, because that's a loaded question, so I want to make sure I'm getting exactly what he's asking. Is he asking about the subject of specific prices that are due at specific times, or is he talking something else that we might have referred to?
Brad, you have 15 seconds.
You have 15 seconds to answer that. Is that your final answer?
Brad says, yes, specific prices at specific times.
Well, it is simple. Oh, are you still with me, Dwayne?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, good. I had to reset something on my computer here, and I thought that might have dropped you. I just suddenly, poof, disappear. Right when he asked the question, I throw the smoke bomb down, the smoke clears, and I'm just nowhere to be seen. That's funny. It is simple, but it's not so simple that it could be explained. First of all, obviously, it's an insight that I'm not teaching it right now. but so I'm not in the, you know, I'm not going to just be able to reveal it. It would take, it would have to be revealed in order to show it to you. You would have to see it visually, because to be honest with you, I'm not mathematical by nature. I can explain things after discovering something by math, but I am not mathematical by nature. So a lot of what I've discovered is visual by nature. That's why our main forecasting technique is called spatial, which is spelled S-P-A-T-I-A-L, relationship forecasting. When something is related spatially, it means that it has a certain physical distance, it has a certain physical height or low to it, all these different facts. It's spatial. It has three dimensions to it. So spatial relationship forecasting is a really, in my opinion, it's a really adequate term to describe what we do in the markets. But the main principle has to do with what he's asking about is, you know, the idea that certain prices are due at certain times has to do with the fact that time is one of the three dimensions in the market, and that all three of them are connected. And the proof that they're connected, one proof that they're connected, is that you can make a forecast for a specific price to be reached at a specific time. As an example, yesterday, the forecast that we made for the 27-point decline from the sixth-hour top, that could have been made in a number of different ways. It was verbalized that way, but I could have made the forecast differently. I could have said, as an example, that the market is going to make a top in the sixth hour plus or minus an hour, and then it's going to touch 11:30, whatever the price was, you know, that we're talking about, which is 27 points down, in the seventh hour, just as an example. Whatever the whenever it hit, we could have forecast the time that it was going to be reached. That would be the 11:30 price at the seventh hour. So, but that actually is confusing to people, what we have found, because we used to, as you remember, Duane, on your program, we used to make calls all the time for specific price levels at certain times. But what we have found out is that actually confuses people.
And so
what I've done is I've flipped it around, and instead of calling for a specific time for the price to be reached, which we know in almost every case, instead of doing that, we're simply calling for a certain amount of points movement to occur. Market's going to drop 27 points. Uh-oh. Hold on here. Stay with me.
Okay.
I'm hearing some music in my system here, and I have to shut that off.
Okay. It's not me.
I thought
this
that
time.
Was you first, Duane.
No, it's not me this time.
All right. There we go. Sorry about that. So you see what I'm saying? So we changed the way we verbalize the forecast because the time portion was throwing people off. So we don't do that anymore. And so that's why yesterday's forecast was, and usually roadmaps have that 20, you know, we'll say it's X number of points that it's going to go down, rather than saying it's going to hit, you know, 11:30 or whatever the price is in the sixth hour or whatever. So I can't give it to you directly, but I can tell you that it's amazingly simple. It's like many other things. It's very simple, but it might take a little, it does take a little work to see it. And I've always felt, and I did right from the very beginning with markets, I always felt that there was something purposeful about their motions, that they were doing something to satisfy certain price levels, etc. I've always felt that way, even right from the very beginning. And I think I can say with, you know, I've put it this way, I've satisfied myself that that is the case, that the movements in markets are not random, that they're under law, and that there is a three-dimensionality to them, that they're exhibiting the same types of relationships within their own three dimensions as does, say, electricity and any other form of energy. That might be a good hint for you. Why don't you run with that one? Was that Jeff or who asked that?
That was asked by Brad.
By Brad. Why don't you run with that at the very least? That it is relatable to energy like electricity. You know how electricity has ohms, watts, and amps, and that's three different ways of measuring the whole. You have the whole effect right there. This is electricity. But we always have three great things. What are those three things? Are the three dimensions of electricity. So it works I mean, the three-dimensionality works in much the same way in the markets as it does in any other thing. But electricity is a form of energy. The markets are a form of energy. So that's why we can say something like, today we can go way into the future, which we did several weeks ago. We talked about the August 22nd reversal, and we can even tell you how many points it's going to go up or down at that time because of the nature of how those three dimensions work. So it's fascinating, and it has a very usable thing, and at some point we may teach it. We right now are teaching reflected wave, which is turning points and how to know them in advance and how to call specifically whether the market's going to make a top or a bottom in the future and be able to trade that top or bottom. And so that's a very powerful tool. This is something that I'm teaching now. Amongst the people who take that course will be the people who take if we do teach anything later, the people who have kept the secret to themselves, who have not revealed it, and who have used it in their training, and of course they would have to be happy with it to take any further, but then at some point I might teach the later stuff, which would include what we're talking about now. So, consider that. But you would have to be, and this is not a marketing scheme, but you got to have a reflected wave. Because in order to do all the things that you see us doing on the day-to-day basis here, we're tying together two and three different viewpoints, two and three different non-correlated techniques. Sometimes I'll say, well, there's a bottom coming in the third hour today. Well, that's reflected wave. And then I'll say, well, it's going to go up 18 points. Well, that's three-dimensional. So I'm tying two different things together. Yesterday's trade was both reflected wave for the top, and it was roadmap or three-dimensional for the 27-point decline. There's no other way that I know of to have known that information. There's always a faster gun, so there's definitely a possibility that there's other ways to do it. But I can't figure out another way to know the information that the market's going to top on a specific hour and that it's going to reverse and go 27 points down and know that with great certainty, certainty enough to publicly broadcast it on a radio that's played all over the world. That type of certainty, maybe somebody else is seeing it from some other angle and they call it something different, but I think the main principle would have to be understood in order for somebody to do that. And so anybody that we ultimately later, if we do teach this later work, it would be only to people that are reflected wave students, because it really comes together when you can tie and juggle these two things around. You can really get some marvelous setups. The whole goal of this is to improve your trading and have super high very high probability trades. It doesn't mean you're going to be in every trade. It just because your own risk tolerance, etc. But it does mean that you know how to pick a high probability trade. And that's the whole magic. You know, Dwayne's system, what he and Michael have, is very effective for picking the trades that they pick as well. And they're using a completely different way of doing it. Michael Reed from Trade Stalker, he has a very more pattern-based, pattern recognition-based thing, and he trades, and he can select high-probability trades. So the high-probability portion doesn't belong to reflected wave and to three-dimensionality. It's just our particular way of developing a high-probability trade. So I'm not sure how we quite got on that. Oh, he asked the question about it.
It's just the goggles. Those are the goggles you wear.
That's the goggles I wear. And I would really like the fellow, if Brad is interested, I'd really, put it this way. Our interest would be to train people who have already got reflected wave, if we're going to do this later, and that they've kept it a secret, because I'm very, very big on that. And anybody who's read our agreement, knows that. And I'm very serious about it. And so those people will pick from the group of people that we've already trained. And I really think it's worthwhile having reflected waves.
Those cavity searches are brutal.
What's that?
I said those cavity searches are brutal.
Yeah, the cavity searches are brutal. Anyway, we are making a new high right now. This is what we wanted. We wanted to see a new high. And let's double check this. Hold on here. In the S&P.
There's that 67.68 that Iris asked about.
Yes.
And Steve wants to know if we're selling it. We're selling the silly thing. He didn't really say that.
Well, there we go. You're going to sell the darn thing or the silly thing or whatever it is. Let me just take a quick look with us here. See, I like this now. This is interesting. So I'm going to let this cook a little bit here, but as we leave, I know we've been on for a long time today, but you get me talking, and you can't shut me up. See? And like I've always said, it's a disorder. I need to see a specialist. I don't know where it all comes from. It just keeps coming. So somebody has to finally say, thank you, Mr. Williams, for being on our program today, you know, and just shut me down. Because I feel like I could still go for another easy hour and a half or something.
Wow.
But that's why I'm saying there's something wrong. There's something wrong with me. Here's what we'll do. That's why I'm the ideal talk show host.
You
because
really are.
I don't know. You know, I'll just keep going until you tell me to stop.
I lay the headphones down, go water the little corn.
I know. Go
back,
water the corn and the euro that's growing in your backyard. Yeah. They're attempting that in our panel today, similar to what Dwayne has, we have we actually have 69/70, which is a little tiny bit higher, but right in that same range. And as long as, you know, roughly speaking, let me just leave you with this, because we're not going to be on at the time, but roughly speaking, as long as we're not closing hourly above, say, 72 at the worst case, you realize you have to take a little more, you have to be willing to sit with a little more risk with this. The idea for this trade is that we want to short somewhere up in this area. And I've been doing a lot of talking and I haven't been watching, so I don't have everything laid out. But we want to short somewhere in this area for a second attempt on the downside at the 1152 level into today's last hour. The only thing I don't like about this setup is that the last hour is plus or minus an hour, and it could mean possibly that we'd have to wait until tomorrow. And holding positions on the overnight is a big deal now. The margins are high and all that stuff. So yesterday, it was an easy call because we knew that the turn was coming, in the sixth hour, and it was a volatility cycle, and volatility cycles usually run very quickly, like yesterday's, decline for 27 points. This is not the same class of cycles, so it may not run as fast to it. It may require the overnight position. So, I apologize for the setup because it's not as clean as yesterday's was. But that's what we're looking for. The 52 will be tested as long as they stay hour. Let's put the whole thing together this way. Continued hourly closes at or below 72 will indicate a tradable decline down to 52. Let's see, 72 minus 52. Well, using the new math, that's 20 points. That's pretty good. And listen, even if you get some of that today, that's worth doing. Doesn't have to be perfect. Let's all be just lusciously imperfect. Let's just live an imperfect life and get 10 points out of that. How's that? How are them apples?
That sounds good.
Something like that. Yeah, we can all do it.
If somebody just wanted to be in the market from this point, using that 72 number, you're going to have to risk at least 6 points. But the downside.
Yeah, I think that's a good number. I think that's good. I think that's probably true.
The potential is, let's see, carry the 1, what, 14
divide
points?
By 9.
Yeah.
Measure by your birth weight. Subtract your mother's maiden name. I just love hearing you calculate. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. That's it, about 14 points. So you're risking about 6 for 14.
Yeah.
If you were to enter here, or, who knows, yeah. You may get a better entry higher than this. Or
I'm not quite ready for the sell the silly thing yet. The fellow mentioned that, and that's a legitimate question. And the one reason why is because the natural decline – on the last decline that we just had, if you just took a look at, a 15-minute chart, maybe you could throw this up, Dwayne. Let me just show this to you real quick. The decline.
A 15-minute chart?
Yeah, put up a 15-minute chart.
Okay.
See that the top that we made at 11:54?
Oh, hang on.
Just a while back, it was like at 9:45 or something.
Get the right market up here.
The S&P. And then I'll get out of your hair, but this is interesting. This shows you another little piece of how we think about this stuff.
Okay, Chicago time? What time are you talking about?
Well, just the high price that was made, the price was 11:54.25. Just go find that.
11:54.25.
It's just...
right there.
Right there. You see that peak right there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that pullback, the natural level for that pullback to go to was actually 41.5. Okay, and if you see the pullback went down to 42.5,
mm-hmm.
That indicates bullish buying pressure. The same way that I just showed you on the euro for today, the 140.86, the fact that they couldn't quite touch it tells me the trend is still up, that the market still has unexpressed energy in it. It wants to go higher. And we've now gone higher, and we've even gone higher than that. The lady had asked the question, Iris, I'm sorry, that had asked the question when we were up at 65. They pulled back. Well, they already had broken out to new highs there. And so that higher that we were expecting before had already happened. And here we are attempting the 69 or, you know, the 68, 69 level that we talked about. So this is that's a good example of if the market wasn't – if there wasn't a lot of buying pressure, they would have very easily gone down to 41.5. But they missed it by a point, and that actually means something because there's a real reason that they have to touch 41.5. And if they can't, it means that there's unexpressed buying pressure still in the market. That's a really interesting concept, that the buying hasn't expressed itself, but it somehow is revealed in the fact that the market can't reach its natural level. We've talked about this a number of times, and this is a good example of it. So now we're up doing the number that Iris had asked about, and from this point forward, like I said, the only thing I don't like about this is that it runs into the overnight, but there might be a trade in it anyway. Let's let them finish this off, testing these levels, and then we'll, you know, we'll go try to take a trade. Actually, Dwayne, these people could, everybody could use, anybody who's got your particular stuff could use it to take a short position, waiting for whatever indications would identify that for you.
This chart right here, as this rolls over, turns red, the cycle is poised, so we don't have the complete setup yet, but it's coming together.
Yeah, okay, and when it does, they can look at it. We're about 9 minutes away from closing this half hour, and I do want to mention that the time period that I'd be interested in looking for at the top would be in the following half hour. In other words, after 9 minutes from now, that 30-minute period from that point forward would be my preferred area to be looking for a top. It may come, you know, we've seen a lot of one-unit earlies and all that other stuff, so that's fine, but that's when I would like to look for a top here.
Okay.
So isn't that fun? Mm-hmm. We got something going here.
I'll leave this chart up, guys.
Yeah.
I'll leave it up.
And we'll go from there. And, Dwayne, as always, it's been a pleasure to be on the program. One of the nice things I like about this program is that we express our opinions. We're allowed to talk. Nobody's beating anybody over the head because they don't like your particular thing for the most part. And, you know, I'm a guest. If I do say something that either politically or religiously or some other way offends you, I'm not doing it to offend you. I'm doing it because I'm on the program and I'm expressing how I think about something. And you don't, just because somebody doesn't express your particular opinion doesn't mean you have to hate that person. You know, it's the easiest thing in the world to hate.
Oh,
it
yeah.
takes the least amount of energy to hate somebody else. That's the easy one. It's way, way, way harder to be neutral and a whole lot harder to be positive towards somebody who happens to not hold the same cherished opinions that you might hold.
Love thine enemy.
So, yeah, right, and there it is out of the Bible as well. If you have different opinions than I do, I am going to do my very best not to hate your ever-loving guts. No. If you have different opinions than I do, the purpose of my life is to not let your opinions dictate to me what my emotions are supposed to be. So do you understand that if I say something that you don't like and you hate me, that I'm your puppet master? I got the strings.
Yeah.
Do you really want to live that life? You feel strong when you hate somebody. Ooh, boy, I'm really in power. No, you're not.
Nope. They got the power.
They got the power. All right, so here we go. They're just about to hit the 69 level. Boy, I'd love to stay on and watch the thing go here. And, you know, like I said, if we on our today's support and resistance.
There's an old
that?
Country saying about when you, you know, it's called, how does it go? I got your goat, or getting someone's
yeah.
goat, right? And so I'm always, you know, doing things with my son, and mom will go, oh, daddy got your goat. And
mm-hmm.
Gabe will get all worked up. And I said, son, you know how to prevent that, right? Yes, dad. Tell me, son. I need to stop keeping goats. Very good, son.
Well, there you are.
The same thing can be, you know, the same thing. I used to use this in counseling. I'd say, you know, because when I would counsel a couple, he's always pushing my buttons. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, why don't you go to zippers? Huh?
There you are.
Get rid of the buttons.
Yeah.
He can't punch a button. He can't push a button if you ain't got one, right? How do I do that?
And one other thing I'll say about that, and then I will go here, okay, but a couple things real quick on the market.
Right.
Our last number for today is the 6970 level. We may see a little higher than that, but the fact that they're able to do this and the fact that we didn't do the 52 in the sixth hour, we're just finishing up the fifth now, this is other than the last hour of the day thing where we have to potentially wait overnight, this is a setup that I really like. So I'm very happy with this. One last thing I'm going to say, the time and day is going to come in your life, and hopefully soon, if I may say so, that you're going to see from yourself that hatred only hurts you. And no man consciously hurts himself. And so if you're loving hatred, if you're loving being pissed off and loving hating, that means you haven't yet seen that it's bad for you. It feels good. It gives you a big false feeling of life. It gives you a nice big energetic surge to hate somebody, and it empowers people to start wars and fight them all the way through to the end. That's how powerful hatred is. But when you see for yourself that hatred hurts you, you'll have no problem dropping it. It'll be just that easy, because you don't want to hurt yourself now, do you? Nobody does. And when you see something's really hurting you, well, you stop that stuff right now. You just don't see it right now. It feels too good to hate. But that feeling good, it's like the feeling good of a drug addict taking a drug that makes him feel good while it's, you know, robbing his body of his very life.
You know, so, on the rare I'm happy to say, on the rare occasion that I do allow my anger to get away from me momentarily, or however long it might. I try not to berate the store clerk for too long, but
right.
I feel absolutely horrible when I mm-hmm. realize that I am beside myself with anger, and I look at myself and I'm like, oh my God, who is that guy? And then, you know, I can't apologize in most cases quick enough, because I don't want to be that guy. That does not feel good to me. Now, there was a time in my life when I lived in that space and inhabited it, and, you know, it was it defined who I was. But I again, thank God I'm in a place now where I know it's not just that I know that's not who I want to be. It's when I become human for a moment, when I act human as I am, mm-hmm. I realize it, that's horrible. I feel really, I would rather, you know, this sounds weird, but I would rather punch you in the nose than hurt your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Is that weird or what?
I know. That is weird.
Okay. Well, if we can end on that.
Seek professional counseling.
I've been wandering around in this park for too long.
No, I get your point, Dwayne. We're doing the 69. We're testing it right now. This is a critical juncture here. I'll go. I hope the information is useful. Let's try to trade this. Remember, they may spike. It's possible they may spike 72 level, but if they do, you just have to realize there's larger risk in this trade because of the volatility, and then we'll hold it for the remainder of the session to see if we can get some nice trade on the downside. We'll cover this. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Beautiful.
But you got to love trading.
I do.
You know, if you just wait for the easy and the obvious to come, it makes it a lot easier, and we're trying to help everybody understand what the easy and the obvious is.
Well, I appreciate it, Dave.
On the program here.
Thanks for being
on the
show.
All right, well, listen, my pleasure. Thank you for all the questions. I appreciate that. And I'll plan on talking with you tomorrow, Dwayne.
Okay.
Same time.
We'll see you then.
Okay, thanks a lot, everybody.
Bye-bye now.
See you then.
Friends, that's going to wrap it up. I will leave this chart going, and for those of you that don't know how this setup works, it's pretty simple. The MA1, the CFMA1, which is the backbone of the indicator set. There's a lot of other tools, but this is really the driving force right here. It's red it's ready to go short. Okay? The cycle indicator is lagging a little bit. Does that mean one could not take this pullback entry here? No, you still could. But you're jumping ahead of this. Okay, you're second guessing that this is in fact going to roll over and turn red. What I will do is I'll sit here and I'll watch for them both to get to turn red and hook down. And then I'll look for any pullback entry along the way down to that 1152 number. Okay. See, here's a pullback here. Now, there's a couple different ways to look at this. One, you can go, well, this hasn't confirmed yet, so I'm just not going to take the trade. The other way of looking at it, okay, and this gets outside of our rule set for this trade setup, is you can say, you know what? I'd rather take my chances and be short from a higher price, like the 68 number we're at right now, 68.50, because if I wait for this to turn red and hook down, I'm going to be getting short maybe more like 66, more like 65. Now, there's still plenty of profit left down to 52, but the lower you enter, okay, the more risk you have to have on the trade. Because currently, the swing high is right there. And David threw a little caution in there with his statement, too, that, you know, we might see a spike to 72. We might not. So, you have to, at this point, make a decision. Okay. Am I willing to get in here without this additional confirmation and risk to, you know, a couple ticks above 72? Or am I going to wait, get confirmation, then enter, and have additional risk? Or, this is another option, two more options really. You could be short here, only risking to there, and say, you know what, if I get it wrong this time, I'm risking so little, because it's a 14-point move, I will, or it's more than that at this point. Because from here to here, I mean, your risk, your stop's just right up here. If I get it wrong and get stopped out, I didn't get stopped out for a lot. So I will enter again once I do get the confirmation, or once price does move in my direction. So hopefully that makes sense. If not, come take the free trial or come to the partners meeting tonight. All right, 1152. Okay, this is the target down here. All right. Probably two more bars. We'll get this hooked down. All right. I'll leave that chart running. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision. The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.